As Fox Holloway prepares to sing Music on the Mind for the second time, I wanted to find out how choir members were feeling about performing this piece. For myself, I initially found it emotionally challenging because it resonated for me with my mother's long-term struggle with clinical depression, and it was sometimes hard to give myself totally to the music. Second time around, I am more familiar with it and less fearful. I'm also convinced of the importance of opening up the conversation around mental health. After all, many of us will have experience of mental health problems, either in our own lives or those close to us. But it's still largely an aspect of life surrounded in silence and often shame. Several choir members kindly came forward to talk to me about their own feelings and experiences, and we'll hear from them in a moment. But first, I talked to Harvey.
Musically, we've moved on so much in the last 4 years. So now we're really singing in the music itself confidently. And I think that feeds into the whole feeling about the piece, actually, because when you're struggling to learn the notes and it's a heavy or, you know, not necessarily heavy, some of it's very funny, but it's difficult subject matter. If you're also struggling with the notes, it just can be, you know, quite a burden. And I think some people found it hard last year. And I think less people are finding it difficult this year, I hope. But just the energy of the rehearsal, we just ran nearly the whole first half. And, you know, I just think people are confident that we can do it and that it's worth doing. I think, again, you don't really know whether it's worth doing until you've done a performance. You know, you learn a piece and you grapple with it and you can't imagine what it's like till you perform it. And I've done it twice now and this will be the third time, and I know that it really affects people and it really is emotional and uplifting and harrowing and all of those things.
To be honest, I was very frightened to sing this piece of music, and I deliberately didn't sing it the first time that Vox Holloway put this on, because I have dealt with depression for the past 20 years and just thought, without even looking at it, to be honest, that it would be too close to home. But that said, I'm not sure if enjoying is the right word, but I'm getting something from the communal act of singing about strong feelings together with other people. And in terms of it resonating, for sure, last week we sang a line, "Yet still I sing." Harvey talked about either he had forgotten the word "yet" last time or wanted to correct everyone to make sure they emphasised the word at the beginning of the phrase. And somehow that clicked with me, that I might be very flat, not really feeling much emotion in my everyday life at the moment, but I'm still singing. And that suddenly, a huge weight went off my shoulders, at least for a little while. And that, for me, is what Vox is about. Doing things together and being surprised by music, actually, I think. And then I have a very close friend who had a manic episode when we were in university. And particularly, I think, Harvey's rhythms and melodies, the words maybe aren't as consequential for me, but the rhythms and the melodies of Mania that are coming through very much are, it might have been 20, even more than 20 years ago now that this happened, but the intensity of my friend's descent into thinking that she could solve all of the world's problems if she just wrote about it long enough. There is something in this music that takes me back in the room to being the person kind of trying to figure out what on earth is happening. Yeah, I think, for example, with the pieces about depression, I was looking at the pieces of poetry during the week. And when I do that, when I'm looking at the context around them, somehow that helps me to intellectualize it a little bit, which I think is going to work well for me, because otherwise, if I thought to myself too much what the chasms and the I'm trying to think of some of the other vocabulary that in the Coleridge piece, for example, that really strikes me as my own experience, but Chasm definitely. If I think about those too much with regard to myself, I can't sing it. I'll just sit there and mouth words. Whereas if I think about it as a piece of poetry, as something, and I think this is what's important about singing, for me it's as much to do with the words with the music, allows me to, as I was saying in the beginning, enjoy them in a way that I wasn't expecting. There's something very, very moving about the pieces that are anonymous. From the 16th century, I think one of them is. And you just think to yourself, the stresses and the realities of everyday life for those people must have been very different. And yet, how we cope or not cope is the same. That is extremely comforting. And the idea that not being okay, not being happy all the time, is actually much more a reflection of real life than, you know, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good example. You know, I love singing Christmas carols, let's say, but that's very upbeat and very joyful, and life isn't always that. So maybe it is important for Vox every so often, or actually often, to tackle issues and topics that make us uncomfortable and make our audience uncomfortable, more to the point. And actually, my favourite bit about this, my favourite surprise, having not sung it the first time, is how stunningly beautiful the music is in contrast to the desperation in the words. I think that singing is... it's more accessible than maybe reading an article in a newspaper or listening to somebody be interviewed on the radio about their experience of mental health. Somehow it allows you to kind of, maybe not close your eyes, but to just react to it in an emotional way rather than an intellectual way, perhaps. Mm. And that's for me, empathy and a little bit of, I don't understand it, but I'm feeling emotion with you. I think that's going to be crucial going forward for our world. And it's scary. And I think that's the key for me about this piece of music, is that it is scary. At its heart, it is scary. And if music is only lullabies and love songs, we can only get so far in understanding each other.
Well, I never paid much, you know, but I never bothered much about mental illness or things like depression. But my sister died about 2 years ago, my eldest sister, and I didn't really think I liked her, but the death affected me very, very much. I was angry at her. I don't know, I just had so many adverse feelings. And then I found I had arthritis and I didn't feel I was getting the right treatment. And I just suddenly lost the will to do. Well, I do everyday things, but anything else, like if somebody asked me to go this way or to partake in something, it was just too much effort. And I didn't realize what was happening to me until one day I went to visit my daughter and I broke down in tears. And she asked me what's wrong, and I started telling her, and she said, "You're depressed." So I went to the doctor and spoke to her, and she gave me some medication. And I'm slowly working through it. I wouldn't say I'm perfect, because I still sometimes cry, but I'm much better. And now I can appreciate. And when I see someone melt to illness, I can sort of understand and not judge. It's in my family, because my sister's children all have problems. And I think it was my sister herself. This is another sister who lived in England, but I think she had problems herself. And so the children came up with it. And I thought I was invincible, but I found out I wasn't. You need to talk. If I had kept everything, I think I would have had a breakdown. And, you know, this choir is my salvation as well. Because I knew I had to come here. I'd be singing and I'd sing people. And that kept me going. The first time it didn't affect me at all. But now, and I, even the first bit, I didn't understand it. I understand it now.
Yeah.
So, and some of the notes we sing, I could see. It's, he's actually got how the person felt in those notes. So this, I really, that's why I wanted to sing it, because I feel, I felt that I could understand better. It will help me as well. Because, you know, I follow along and it's like taking me on a journey. Now it has more meaning, and so I could sing it with feeling. There's some quite scary ones. That one I just think, no, I don't like to be, I wouldn't like to be part of that bit. No. When it goes so fast and she's buying this, so many of these, and I just think, no, no, I don't want to get that
bit.
Yeah, because there is, what got me is some of the notes. They were they're really unusual notes that we don't normally sing. And I just think when I hear those ones, I thought, yes, that is part of the illness, those notes. And he couldn't do it any other way, could he?
That's right.
It's really very clever.
When you're writing the music, it was Justin who put all the words together, wasn't it? Including all the poetry. He chose all the poetry.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, I mean, he gave me a long list of about, I don't know, 15 poems or something, and I whittled them down to one. I mean, it's, you never know with poetry whether it's going to work or not musically, because sometimes music just gets in the way of the words or whatever. So I chose various and did that. But he had the brilliant idea of doing the second half, which I'd never heard of this book, An Unquiet Mind, and he didn't tell me anything about it until he just presented me the libretto, and I kind of thought, okay, the poetry, yeah, very nice, lovely, yes, great. Then I came to this thing called An Unquiet Mind. What is this? And I deliberately didn't read the book until after. So I thought the libretto was so good. I thought, well, I'm just going to go with that and not read the book, and sort of, you know, because it seemed to be very good. And I'm quite glad I did that, because and we did the piece, and I thought it came out very well. When I did read the book, it's really interesting that all the information is there, but he's done a very, very good job of putting it into coherent shape. It's kind of now a story of an illness. And it always was, but it was a bit sort of jumps around as she talks about different things and you know, about her life. So it's more anecdotal in the book, but he's put it into a very coherent thing. And so you see the cycles that this amazing woman. We got in touch with her and asked her if we could do it, having written the piece, which is a bit nerve wracking. But she was very keen for us to do it and has given us permission to do it again and again. And you take a whole journey with the person. She was studying psychiatry or medicine of some kind, and discovered she had manic depression and wasn't taking her lithium, the thing she was telling her own students and patients to do, but she was not doing it herself. And so she has this harrowing, you know, sometimes harrowing, sometimes very funny journey through the illness. And sometimes she's just like buying loads of things and just really high and kind of happy and then has a terrible crisis. So we sing, everybody sings, I did this, I did that, the choir, two solos. And so no one is actually the mad person. We are all the mad person, and we are all sane as well, you know, which is like in life, you know, sometimes you're closer to it than to sanity than madness, and sometimes closer to madness. But and I just find it incredibly emotional, and the piece ends, so it tells her whole story, and we all sing her story. It's not kind of one soloist delivering the whole thing and us backing it up. It's really mixed. And then it comes to an end. It's not really a kind of, we can't say it's a completely happy ending, but it is an uplifting ending in that she does find accommodation with her illness. She starts taking lithium, basically, and kind of finds an equilibrium, misses some of the highs, you know, as people do, but also with the help of her friends and family, you know, feels that she's come to an accommodation with it. And she's in a place where she can live a successful life and you know, successful in terms of of existing happily and, you know, with not too many down periods. And so it finishes on that note, and it is very moving.
I think it's a wonderful bit of music. I actually think it's one of the nicest, deepest things that Harvey's written, that we've sung. And I've noticed that people respond very deeply, not everyone, but many people respond actually very, very deeply to it. And I think it touches people a lot. I love the texts, An Unquiet Mind. I haven't read the book, but the text that Justin has prepared is wonderful. And I also particularly like the poems that have been selected. And I just wanted, two in particular have touched me a lot. One is Tom of Bedlam, which I think is a fabulous poem. And I don't know, it was written in early 1600 and something, I think. But the point was, it wasn't written. It was actually a sort of, it seems to me to come completely out of an oral tradition. And if you, a really good thing to do is to get the whole poem. Well, Harvey has selected some verses, but the whole poem is a good bit longer. And go into a room somewhere and read it out aloud. And it absolutely has a rhythm and a springiness and a sort of energy to it, which is wonderful. And you really feel it's been hammered out by people speaking it rather than writing it down. It's got a wonderful, wonderful rhythm to it. And together with that, it's a terrible story. You know, it's about madness, about this chap. It's just madness out of sort of disasters in his life. And ending up, as happened in those days, in Bedlam. And, you know, it's horrible, horrible. But the extraordinary thing is, I find myself smiling at quite a bit of it. It's there's something about the words and the energy and the sort of springing on, the movement on of it. There's an awful lot of humour in it.
Mm.
And it seems to me, maybe there's something there. You know, we all get different degrees of mental trauma and difficulty and stress and, you know, so on. And I think one thing that can help is a sense of humour. And not a sort of jokey humour, but the sort of humour that's in Tom of Bedlam, the sort of humour of describing terrible things, but every now and again with a certain lightness. So it always has that sort of energy to me. So that's Tom of Bedlam. The other poem that, they're all lovely, but another one that really speaks to me a lot is Mad Girl's Love Song by Sylvia Plath. I've always had an interest in Sylvia Plath. I think she's fascinating, really fascinating character. And this poem, I shut my eyes and all the world drops dead. I think I made you up inside my head. She wrote this quite early on when she was still a student. It's very one of her sort of early poems when she was a student at Smith's College in America. But even at that time, I think it was around about the time that she first tried to take her own life and, you know, sort of horrible way, she nearly succeeded, but by chance she was sort of rescued and didn't do it. Later on, her poems show perhaps more anger and deep, deep distress and really quite, sometimes quite shocking images. And of course, you know, I suppose 10 years on after this, she did kill herself. It's not a terribly well-known thing about Sylvia Plath, at least I don't think it's particularly well-known. And I discovered it really by chance. But she was very, very good at drawing. She drew. She did really lovely drawings. I don't think she ever made very much of it. It was just the sort of thing that she did. They exude a sense of calmness, a sort of peace. It's hard to describe, but it really shines out of everything I've seen that she's drawn. And it seemed to me maybe there's something there when we're in the middle of some mental turmoil or another, that most of us, we have a sort of turmoil bit of our person, but also most of us have a sort of, somewhere around, a sort of calm, peace sort of area. And I think something I've learned from Sylvia Plath is that, you know, when you're in the middle of great stress, it's all too easy to get totally focused on it and you sort of, you know, go into a spiral. And maybe if you can, it's worth trying to spend a bit of time in that part of you, which is one of peace and one of calmness. It just seems to me just so interesting, particularly in her the sort of last years where, with Ted Hughes and when the marriage was falling apart. And she was obviously, just from the poems, deeply, deeply sort of shattered. And yet it was not least at that time that she was producing these drawings. And yeah. It just seems to me there's something there we can all learn from. But I like to think that actually drawing was something that helped her in those, something that enabled her to sort of find a bit of peace.
I remember being quite excited and thinking the idea that of doing something to get people interested or talking a bit about sort of mental health issues.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably firstly because I've worked with people with communication disability and for years, and for some client groups, sort of self-advocacy, being open about stammering, talking about aphasia and, you know, the result of stroke on communication and educating people was a big part of therapy, although really, really difficult. But I've always found it seemed really helpful for people. So I thought, oh, that's really good. And in part because my mum suffered a lot with mental health problems, really, and I think she was quite tortured.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very, very ashamed and couldn't sort of talk about it, and sort of back in those days I don't know what help there was,
mm-hmm.
really, or whether she could sort of what help she could sort of take advantage of, I don't know. But in the end, she left home. She just couldn't. And she never really recovered, and she was just very tortured. And I think had society been different, if there'd been less stigma, because where we lived, people used to talk about the loony bin, and she was always afraid that she'd be taken to the loony bin. I'm not going there. And I think if it was a different time, she needn't have had such a sort of painful life. And so I was thinking for other people, like, the more it's out there, the more people are talking about it, I think it's really good. And I phoned up Camden Mind and told them about it. I thought, oh, they need to know. But when we were doing it, I realised that the material was quite hard as well. But I did think, oh, gosh, you know, because I was saying to Camden Mind, oh, yeah, you know, get people to come along. Then I thought, I don't know, actually, it might be really quite difficult for some people to come along because some of the songs are quite hard-hitting, really. And I think that perhaps you have to be at a particular stage, I don't know, in order to sort of be there and sort of hear it. I think when we were learning it, definitely, and when it was quite new, and I mean, there were some, like the horror, is it the horror? the one with the red sunset, which I've never forgotten. It's still really vivid. And that, I think, is really very powerful and quite sort of scary. But I like the end, because you sort of get there and then you get that line where it says, and it passed. Because the last time we, you know, redid it, I still found it very, very difficult, actually. And then when we got to that last line where it says, and then it passed, it was like I went, oh. I had a little breath and I felt sort of better. Because I've also had episodes of depression and anxiety, not like my mum, but I've had about four clear episodes, usually linked to, like the first one was my partner died after a long illness, and I always feel like I've not had a huge breakdown, but a little one. And then that would sort of just reoccur at times of stress. And I know that sort of during those times and after, for quite a long time, I would never have been able to sing or read a lot of those songs. I would be quite frightened of them, actually. I'd be frightened that, oh my goodness, you know, it's coming back, or I'm going to get that, or, you know, it would be too vivid or too much of a reminder. But for me, I could sing them. And for me, it was like, oh, you know, for me, it's a sign that I'm kind of out of that, not out of that territory, but just more on the fringes, much on safer ground, definitely. But then you've got the other ones, which are very powerful in their own way of just sort of conveying what it might be like, but in a sort of more lighthearted way. And I like that. I think, oh yeah, that's such a sort of vivid in a way, the way it's written and how it conveys those sort of experiences, but in a kind of easier way.
There's a choir formed maybe about 10 years ago also, the same as us, at the Maudsley Hospital by a friend of mine called Lee Cornthwaite, who's just a fantastic animateur and singer and just a great guy. And I don't know how it came about, but they asked him to form a choir of people dealing with mental health issues, so service users at the hospital, but also their friends and their families and some staff. And it came to me fairly late in the process when I was writing it. I suddenly remembered that Lee was doing this choir, and I thought, would that be a good... I mean, I just thought it would be a good thing. And I invited them to do it. And without really kind of really thinking it through, probably, like I do things, I just kind of dive in. And then they came to sing it. And actually, that became the most one of the most powerful things about the both performances I've done. I did one in Southampton as well with a choir of patients there as well. And it was really inspiring for me, because the people who are actually dealing with these issues, as we all are actually day by day, but they, you know, they've maybe had some trouble with it. They found it very empowering to sing about it and to express some of the anger and some of the hurt and the feelings of being lost and all that. And to have a choir at the centre of it that is really dealing with the issues, I think was very moving, both performances, and very, very strong, really into it and really singing it confidently, and it gave us a huge lift. And so they're joining us again. This my friend Lee is left now, someone called Nicola who's running it. So I went to meet them the other day, and some of them remember it as well, and so they're quite excited about doing it, and they're really into it. And that'll be us. We were working with them just before the day and then on the day itself. It'll be good.
Well, it just brings back so many things that didn't make sense at the time and kind of make a bit more sense now. The
So your mother, you tell me about your mother.
Yeah, she passed in February.
Yeah.
She's had it bipolar for about 10 years. And she was back and forth into mental institutions, trying lots of different drugs, had psychologists see her. But because the mind gives up, eventually the body gives up. And it was unexpected at that time. She was 69 years old. So she might have gone within a few years because she was getting weaker and more forgetful and existing but not living her life as she used to. She used to be a dinner lady, working with lots of kids, full of life. And then all of a sudden this happened, and sometimes you were repeating the same conversation millions of times to her, you know. And every now and again she could, like, say something that, you know, makes some kind of sense, and a little glimmer or hope was there, like, oh, maybe she'll just get around this, you know. And she also had grandkids, nephews, nieces, brothers, so much to live for, really. So she never gave up, didn't want to give up. But I think the mind is such a complex thing. You don't know one day to the next, you know. So we were having conversations where it's like, I've told you this 1,000 times. No, you haven't. First time I've heard it. And you can't argue, because to her, it was. To you, it's like just aggravation, frustration. And because my dad was amazing. I mean, he's been my hero recently, because he stayed with her and became her carer as well as her husband. She knew who he was. Sometimes that wasn't a good thing, because they were just arguing and shouting all the time. And he went back and forth with her into mental institutions and sat with panels around the table at the end of the day. But he said the one word that you should never ever say to any medical staff ever. He said the word manage. We'll be okay. We can leave here. You will come to help us. Every couple of days we hear from you. Yeah. More support. Thank you. Because it's really bad, but I'm pretty sure I can manage. The second they hear that word, they leave you alone. So he began existing, not living, because he couldn't get his mind or his thoughts straight.
Yeah.
And he couldn't share his problems, mental or physical, because he also had a mental breakdown because of it all. He couldn't share it with nobody because no one would understand. And it's one of them things where you don't tell nobody. You're trying to hide it, put a brave face onto the world, to your family, to your friends, and just get by. Because he's 73 now. He was 63 when it all started. And it's almost like, I'm fine. I've got no problems. Let's have a laugh. And he just laughed through every part of stress that got to him. And everyone saw the happy day, not the bad day in between, you know? So he felt so alone sometimes. At the moment, I'm literally focusing on, because my first time doing the piece, so I'm focusing on, oh, these are the notes I should be singing. It should go like this. And the words are kind of, if I highlight every word at the moment, I would be so scared of doing the piece. But every now and again, there's, and it's not always the big words, but sometimes it's so descriptive in the poems and in the songs taken from quotes and facts from the book itself. And yet I was thinking, well, I'll tell you what I'll do to get used to this. I will buy the book, I will read the book. But then I was told, no, that's the worst thing to do, because all this stuff isn't in order in the book. So you're going to read it out of context, which in a way is how the mind works anyway, because when you have bipolar, I've never had it, but with my condition, I get depressive episodes. I'm not clinically diagnosed with depression. But where everything's muddled all the time, to the person writing the book, it makes perfect sense. But I couldn't connect the words to the song with the book just yet. But I'm going to see how I go. I don't want to run away from it, because I think I should confront it head on. But there are times when you doubt yourself, thinking, it's going to be too much, it's not good.
Well, this is the second time I've sung it. And I wasn't really sure about the music last time around, but actually I'm sort of, it's growing on me the second time around I'm doing it. And I suppose the reason I decided I'd come and do this talk is because I actually work in the mental health service, and I work with people who have severe mental health conditions like bipolar disorder and psychosis. And I know that it had a really mixed reaction amongst the choir last time, because people were saying that, you know, part of the reason they came to the choir was in order to get away from, you know, some of their difficulties, and they didn't really want to have to be singing, be confronted with, you know, singing about, you know, somebody who shared maybe some of the same difficulties that they had. Or so I thought I could understand that in a way, but at the same time, I mean, this choir sings about a lot of difficult issues, and you know, from poverty through to climate change through to you know, children in need or whatever. So I actually, and I think there's a big, there's still a huge stigma attached to mental illness, and people feel that they can't talk about it, and it's not got the same equivalence as if you have, say, a diagnosis of cancer, for example. Although there is stigma attached to that, but I think there's much more stigma attached to mental illness. And so I felt it was a really positive thing, actually, to sing about something that is considered so taboo. And, you know, everybody, I think, has mental health issues to a greater or lesser degree at different times in their lives. And, you know, I grew up with a mother who was very depressed for a lot of her life, and a father who dealt with his issues through alcohol, you know. And it's all, you know, we all have these elements within us. And I feel that the more that we can sort of normalise it and see it as part and parcel of everybody's everyday life, the better that is. But I suppose, I mean, that's, I think, where probably there's a danger also of people thinking, oh, well, you know, if you have a mental illness, that means that you're really, you know, you've got all these terrifically violent, horrible things going on all the time. And actually, there's a whole range of you know, experiences that people have, and they're not necessarily all like that. This is just based on that book, isn't it, by Kay Redfield Jameson. You know, it's only focusing on one particular form of mental illness. It's focusing on somebody who's got bipolar disorder, who has very, very, you know, massive mood swings. And of course, there's a whole range of people with mental health problems that don't have that condition. So I think some people have sort of thought, well, is it kind of stereotyping? Is it actually adding to the stereotype of madness, inverted commas, you know, rather than normalizing it? Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's, I mean, certainly in my field where I work with people with diagnosis of psychosis, I mean, often actually art is the medium that they feel most able to express some of their things. And there are things that are very difficult to express in words, aren't there? So I think music and art and dance even, you know, are forms that maybe can express things in a slightly different way. And I suppose, you know, I look forward to the day when people feel that it doesn't have to be something that you have to run away from or hide, or, you know, that we could just all accept that we all have that potential within us at any time in our lives, and that it shouldn't be something to be ashamed of, really. You know, I'm coming from a point of view of somebody who, you know, hasn't had a mental health or mental illness, at least a diagnosed mental illness. Therefore, I guess, you know, I'm talking from a point of view of somebody who hasn't been in that situation. And this, the thing I like about this choir is it is always quite socially aware, and it sort of tackles, it's not afraid to tackle difficult issues. And that's one of the things I think is really great about it.
I feel a bit like Emma Thompson said, you know, we all have physical well-being, and we also have, you know, times when we're not so well, and we talk about that, but we don't talk about our mental well-being or lack of it. And I just think the thing about all the poetry and the second half of the story, The Unquiet Mind, is just such a human story. All of it is completely human. I relate to absolutely everything in it, but the degrees to which I feel those things are a little bit less. But I don't think there's anything frightening in it. I mean, there is a frightening bit where she's hallucinating, but we all get that too, you know. Sometimes we just lose control a bit. We just all do have struggles. If we deny it, we're probably not doing ourselves any favours.